To the committed supporters of the civil rights movement, Negro and white, whose steadfastness amid confusions and setbacks gives assurance that brotherhood will be the condition of man, not the dream of man. A special note of thanks is due Hermine I. Popper, whose editorial skills and warm spirit of cooperation contributed greatly toward the completion of this book. Introduction. Having shared a precious friendship with Martin King during the last 10 years of his life, I was very pleased to learn that Beacon Press was returning to its important role as a publisher of his book-length works. Then, when I was asked to write the introduction for this new edition of King's fourth book, many powerful memories flooded my being. First and most important was my recollection of how determined Martin was to be fully and creatively engaged with the living history of his time, a history he did so much to help create. But also, a dangerous and tumultuous history that shaped and transformed his own amazingly brief, yet momentous searching life. From this position of radical engagement, it would have been relatively easy for King, if he chose, to confine his published writing to telling the powerful stories of the experiences he shared almost daily with the magnificent band of women, men, and children who worked in the Black-led Southern Freedom Movement, recounting how they struggled to transform themselves, their communities, this nation, and our world. Instead, going beyond the stories, King insisted on constantly raising and reflecting on the basic questions he posed in the first chapter of this work. Where are we? And in the overall title of the book itself, where do we go from here, chaos or community? Always present, of course, were the deepest questions of all. Who are we? Who are we meant to be? These are the recognizable queries that mature human beings persistently pose to themselves and to their communities as they explore the way toward their best possibilities. Not surprisingly, such constant probing toward self-understanding was a central element of King's practice when he was at his best. Indeed, it was the urgent need for such self-examination and deep reflection on the new American world that he and the freedom movement helped create that literally drove King to wrestle publicly and boldly with the profound issues of this book. Ironically, it was almost immediately after the extraordinary success of the heroic Alabama voter registration campaign, which led to the Selma to Montgomery March and the follow-up congressional passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, that King realized he had to confront a very difficult set of emerging American realities that demanded his best prophetic interpretation and his most creative proposals for action. Perhaps the most immediate and symbolic energizing event came just days after President Lyndon Johnson signed the hard-won historic Voting Rights Act, when the Black community of Watts in Los Angeles exploded in fire, frustration, and rage. When King and several of his co-workers rushed to Watts to engage some of the young men who were most deeply involved in the uprising, they heard the youth say, "We won." Looking at the still smoldering embers of the local community, the visitors asked what winning meant. And one of the young men declared, "We won because we made them pay attention to us." Building on all of the deep resources of empathy and compassion that seemed so richly and naturally a part of his life, King appeared determined not only to pay attention, but to insist that his organization and his nation focus themselves and their resources on dozens of poor, exploited Black communities, and especially their desperate young men, whose broken lives were crying out for new humane possibilities in the midst of the wealthiest nation in the world. Speaking later at a staff retreat of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, King expressed a conviction that had long been a crucial part of what he saw when he paid attention to the nation's poorest people.